Good morning, Professor.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for joining us. And to start us off, what is the concept of the uncanny valley?
So it's the idea that humans are repulsed by, or tend to be repulsed by, things that approach human-like but aren't quite, but are known not to be humans. So coined by one of the pioneers of humanoid robots, a guy called Mori in Japan, many years ago. And I guess it's in the news because of the amazing performance of the Google thing. When people found out that it was not human, they tended to be repulsed by it.
Wow, I guess that's quite a weird thing. How maybe until they knew it was AI, it probably wasn't a creepy concept to them.
I think that's probably right. I don't know. I haven't looked into it in a great deal, but one of the interesting things that this points to is something called the Turing test, which was coined by effectively the originator of artificial intelligence, Alan Turing, in the 1950s, who proposed this idea that something would be seen as artificially intelligent if it could behave as a black box and fool humans into thinking that it was human. So this has come as close to passing the Turing test as anything so far.
Wow, that's quite amazing. What are some of the applications for this lifelike AI in the tech world?
So, I mean, it's hard to say exactly what applications there are for lifelike tech. There's obviously huge applications for artificial intelligence more generally for helping humans. Personally, I don't work in things that resemble necessarily humanoid robots, and so I haven't given a great deal of thought to what those uses might be. And I note from the coverage last week that Google has explicitly said that they will make sure that people know that they are talking to a bot rather than to a human, to try and avoid this question that people are creeped out by it. I actually think that it will be a little bit worrying for me personally as well to think that I didn't know, was I dealing with something that was AI or a human.
That's so true. That would be, I'm sure it would be bugging quite a lot of people if it came to the forefront of what maybe telecommunications came to. It'd be quite an annoying thing to be thinking. Now, going back to the concept of uncanny valley, what are some of the ways to make this AI maybe seem less lifelike, as have been suggested by some sources?
Yeah, well, so I think that the primary one, which is the one that has been immediately proposed by Google, is that you just make sure that the agent, the bot, makes it clear that's what it is when it starts out. That may be sufficient for many people. It may not be sufficient for other people. It was interesting that Google explicitly tried to make it sound as much as it could like a human by even inserting things like and ah into the articulations. That might have caused people to be a bit creeped out, because there's an explicit attempt to mimic human speech there rather than just to accomplish the task at hand. And so maybe that's something that designers need to take into account, that people would be very happy to have an AI assistant help them, but perhaps that AI assistant needs to have all the smarts without explicitly trying to mimic being a human.
It's definitely going to be for some people and not for some people, as I can imagine. What is the future of lifelike artificial intelligence in the tech industry, to your opinion?
So I think, again, it depends exactly what you mean by lifelike. I think if it were accepted by the general public, then there are huge applications in things like social robotics, helpers in hospitals and so forth. My personal view is that a lot of that doesn't need things that are necessarily human-like. They need to have human-like qualities, in that they need to be able to interact intelligently with the environment. They need to be able to make sensible and trustworthy decisions. Perhaps I can come back to that issue of trust in a second. But I don't think they necessarily need to mimic a human. One of the things that is reading about the uncanny valley is that it doesn't just appear in robots. It appears also in things like films, and that filmmakers will explicitly use devices like modifying a human form in small ways to try and evoke a creepy response from the audience. And I think the same thing was found by animators, that if they couldn't quite nail down a human animation, they're better off going for something like a caricature and humans would relate better to the caricature. And I think we see that with school children. They interact very well with things like the now humanoid robots that aren't explicitly trying to mimic a human. They're just acting a little bit like a human and have cute things like big eyes and so forth.
Yeah, I guess a good... Oh, sorry, yeah, continue on.
Oh, no, so I was just going to say, that I think the question of trust is a very, very big one. And it's certainly one that many, many people in AI, our lab in Adelaide included, are thinking very closely about, which is that a lot of the huge strides that have been made in artificial intelligence up to now, it's arguable have been done on the back of black box mathematics that people don't necessarily understand, and we don't have a really good grasp of when something goes wrong, why has it gone wrong, and can we roll back and say we can make sure that doesn't happen again because we understand why it went wrong. And so that's a very big issue at the moment in terms of research on AI. Can we build AI that is trustworthy? And I think that will be a big step forward when we have AI that we can actually absolutely predict how it will behave and have confidence in its behavior.
Yeah, trust is definitely a massive instinct, a human instinct that comes into, I guess, as I said, trusting these things to do their job. And I guess it's going to be very interesting to see where this lifelike artificial intelligence, or just artificial intelligence itself, takes us in the future. Thank you so much, Professor, for talking to us this morning.
You're welcome.